You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Chris Grouse is a Los Angeles-based writer, art critic and editor whose novels include I Love Dick, Torpor, Aliens and Anorexia and Summer of Hate. Educated in New Zealand, she moved to New York age 21 and her biography of writer Kathy Acker is due out late 2017. Chris, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good.
And you're back in Auckland now?
Yes.
How are you finding it being back?
Gosh, well, I mean, a rainy Thursday morning in Auckland is just a rainy Thursday morning in Auckland. But I've been connecting with a lot of old friends, and it's good. The first thing I saw when I got here, I'm staying in central Auckland near the art gallery. Mm-hmm. My friend Judy Darrow's enormous, beautiful aluminum sculptures hanging from the ceiling. It was great.
Incredible. And tell me about, so you grew up in Wellington, and then you spent some time in Auckland as well?
Yes. Well, I used to come up to Auckland occasionally, but it was kind of this epic road trip to get up here. It would take like 12 hours on the bus. Sometimes I would hitchhike. I never got to know the city very well. And of course, it's changed a lot over all those years.
Mm. And how long has it been since you've been back?
Well, I've been back, I guess, in 2015. I was back in Wellington to do a conference at MASI.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. And so just getting to your writing, you're here for the Writers' Festival. I guess just to start, what kind of mood are you in when you write?
Well, sometimes just a kind of very determined mood, mm-hmm. and sometimes a really emotional mood. I mean, sometimes there's this kind of good kind of sadness that drives writing. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly depression, but it's almost like you're filled with feeling. But when you're working on a book, it's a marathon, and you're not going to feel the same every day, and you're definitely not going to feel like doing it every day. So I have these work habits that help me through when I'm working on a book.
And you're also a filmmaker. How do you know when you have an idea if you want to work it out through writing or film?
Well, I gave up filmmaking after making Gravity and Grace mm-hmm. in the mid-90s. As soon as I started writing and published I Love Dick, I swore to make never to make another film, mm-hmm. and I've stuck to that. So it's always writing.
Great. And you said in an interview that you often feel like you have a secret addressee. Why is that?
Because it's like talking. I mean, in a lot of ways, writing is like talking. And you talk differently to all the different people in your life, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to have that kind of direct connection in writing, you almost need a silent partner. You almost have to kind of imagine that you're speaking to somebody that you know in life.
Mm, absolutely. And in Aliens, Anorexia, you wrote, sometime during the second night of non-stop crying, my father called and said, you'd better stop. And so I did, because I'd been crazy once already in New Zealand. And I remembered crazy women hardly get to speak, let alone make movies. And that idea of the crazy woman goes kind of throughout your work. You've also described New Zealand as kind of mad. Why? What do you mean by crazy?
Am I wrong?
No, not at all. It's a mad place.
Thank you. I mean, that thing about madness has resonated with a lot of my younger friends who either still live in New Zealand or who've left mm-hmm. and live in LA or in London. I mean, crazy as an extremity, right? Crazy as an excess. It's just too much to feel too much. I mean, in any kind of small closed society, there are benefits, but there are also disadvantages. And one of them, I mean, as it runs throughout New Zealand literature, that anybody who is really too excessive, especially female and excessive, gets quickly kind of blackballed and shut down.
Absolutely. There's also in your work this idea of the woman waiting by the phone. I'm thinking of your essay, Emotional Technologies, as well as the crush at the centre of I Love Dick. Is that woman the same crazy woman?
Well, I mean, that woman is every woman.
Mm.
Right? I mean, that's just a kind of running joke throughout all of, I mean, it's Bridget Jones, it's everywhere, you know, because women are held to such a double standard. You know, if you're a heterosexual female, you're supposed to be somewhat kind of reticent and passive and wait for things to happen. And yet at the same time, what can you do to make them happen? And all the comedy kind of occurs from that double bind.
Absolutely. I think I read something a little while ago that said desire was a better place than hope, because hope is that passive, whereas desire means you have to kind of go out and do that to make that happen.
Yeah.
Which is similar. You said that you approached the writing of I Love Dick as a case study of your midlife crush. Tell me a bit about that process.
Well, I mean, it was totally spontaneous. When I wrote the first letters to Dick that appear in the book, I didn't think I was writing a book. I really thought I was just writing letters that I was going to give or send to this person. But quickly, I mean, by the time I wrote the third or fourth letter, I saw that something was happening there, that I was acting so teenage, you know? I hadn't been that way since I was 14 years old, and there I was like 38, 39 years old. So that was crazy. And I decided that, well, okay, I'm in a position to study it because it's happening now to me through the telescope of time. So as a 38-year-old, I can like relive what it's like being 14, but maybe I can understand it better.
Absolutely. Jeez. So good. So good. And so I Love Dick is having this kind of resurgence now. I think it was it republished last year? And then a couple of years ago, I think all my favorite writers seem to be Instagramming it. Why do you think that it's having this kind of resurgence?
Well, all these younger women picked up on it when it came out the second time. It was actually as far back as 06. And they started blogging about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, word travels really fast on blogs. It's a lot different from the zines that we had in the 90s. So the word spread quickly among this whole demographic of like smart young women living in cities or wanting to live in cities. And from there, it pretty quickly moved out into the larger culture. I think, you know, the TV thing didn't happen until it appeared in The New Yorker. But The New Yorker writer, Leslie Jameson, who's also like a wonderful writer, her book Empathy Exams, I'm sure you can find here, she discovered it over Instagram. I mean, she was curious because her friends were Instagramming it, so she checked it out.
Yeah, that's the same way that I found it as well. It does spread a different way, I think, much faster, like
yeah,
you were saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's this kind of, you know, kind of tech-assisted word of mouth.
Absolutely. And so in talking about this book, people often want to rush to the question of truth or authenticity, how much of it actually happened, which I think feels kind of like the least interesting question. You've said that women have been denied all access to the apersonal. Do you think it makes a difference if, as a reader, you know which details are true and which are made up?
Not at all. Do you like the writer? Have you ever read Marguerite Duras?
Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, all of her novels are coming at certain incidents in her life from a different perspective and a different time in her life. And the drama isn't really whether it was true or not true, but how she's looking back on herself at 15 when she's 35 and how she's looking back on herself at 15 when she's 75.
Exactly.
Do you remember that book? She told the same story of the Chinese lover two different ways at two different times in her life. So I don't know why people are so obsessed now with this fiction, auto-fiction. I mean, the great New Zealand writer Janet Frame, most of those incidents in her books more or less came from life, but no one questioned the fact that she was a novelist.
And I think even if you are writing stuff about your own life, it's still not necessarily kind of objectively true from all angles anyway. There's kind of also a cult following of I Love Dick, especially like you're saying before, women my age and maybe a little older. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's a young woman's book, right? I mean, I'm talking about things that happen to people in their late teens and early 20s. I happen to be an older person talking about them, but I'm revisiting them. So, I mean, of course the book is going to appeal to people who are now having those experiences. The book came out in Japan in the 90s, shortly after it came out in the U.S., and they made the mistake of thinking it was like a housewife novel, like a midlife crisis novel, and it didn't do well at all. But when it, you know, when it's presented as a book, it connects right away.
Definitely. And now there's this TV show being made about it by Jill Soloway. How did that come about?
Well, it was amazing. I guess, you know, one thing, I think Jill saw it, The New Yorker, and we have a mutual friend, Eileen Miles, and maybe a couple of other mutual friends, who told her about it. So she picked up on it, and she invited me to coffee one day. I thought, for no particular reason, just let's meet and chat. And then 3 weeks later, her producer calls and says, well, would you like your book to be a TV show? So that was amazing.
Perfect.
I never doubted that Jill would do it. And I think she's done it just extraordinarily well. Has it streamed here yet?
No, it hasn't, I don't think, because it's on Amazon Prime, isn't it?
Yes, it's Amazon Prime. And season one just streamed last week in the US and the UK.
Very exciting. This next question is very self-indulgent and kind of makes me want to kill myself to ask, but I'm sure you get it all the time. Do you have any advice for young girls from New Zealand who might want to move to New York and write and make films?
Well, I guess you better really ask the young women who've done it more recently. I'm friends with Ruby Brunton. I don't know if you know her work, but she left New Zealand in her 20s. She's now in her early 30s. She's living in Brooklyn. She's kind of making a living as a freelance writer, and she seems to be doing it. I don't think I could do it again. It was hard enough for me when I did it at the end of the 70s, and New York was like dirt cheap then, and nobody wanted to be there. I think if I were doing it now, I would pick a different place. I don't like competition, and I like to be where it's easy.
yeah, for sure. And lastly, later this year, you have a new book coming out, which is a biography of Kathy Acker. Why did you want to write this?
Well, I thought about it ever since Kathy died in 98. I didn't know her personally, but I was really affected by her writing when I moved to New York in my 20s. Before I knew her or any of the people in that crowd, I read her books like everybody else, and I saw her kind of walking in full makeup and regalia at art events and bars and clubs, and I just idolized her. Years went by, and my first novel came out the same month that she died. And I was very devastated by her death. It really radicalized me in a strange way because I was close to it. I was friends with the guy who was taking care of her. And I went down to the alternative clinic in Tijuana where she died. And I thought right after she died that I want to write a book about her life and about her work. And luckily I talked to some friends of hers a few months after, while everybody's feelings were still fresh, you know, and before they were like so old that it was just a nostalgia thing. But then I didn't do it, and I put it on the closet for 15 years. But after I finished Summer of Hate in 2012, I looked at it again and I realized, oh, I think I can write this book now, because it's going to be a lot more distance than it would have been if I'd done it right after her death. So now it's as much a history of the era, and a lot of her friends and lovers and contemporaries who got written out of the story. I mean, you know, for every star, you have to kill 100 people. And I'm really interested in the ones that they had to kill as well.
Absolutely. Chris Krauss, thank you so much. Looking forward to reading that and looking forward to hearing you on Saturday.
Amanda, thank you. And I look forward to seeing you there.
See you there. Bye.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.